Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the International Black Summit Talk Show. I'm your host for this evening, Reverend Henrietta Byrd, and we are fresh from Baltimore once again, just out of a wonderful, wonderful weekend in Baltimore once again. The International Black Summit is a conversation that you must become a part of. Please go to our website, blacksummit.org, and get all of the information that you need to join this conversation with people all over the world. Tonight, we're continuing our conversation about education because you know that is so very important when we talk about self-generation and we talk about our vision for our community. And so we decided that we would continue from last week with more educators because there's so many wonderful educators across the country. And tonight we are just so privileged to have one from the East Coast, from the state of New York, Marie Smith. And we'll be talking to her shortly. But as we do with all, as we begin all of our programs, all of our meetings, we begin with the declaration of the International Black Summit. If you could read along with us, if you're online listening, it's at blacksummit.org, or if you have a copy of it, or you can just listen. And we ask that you listen and find out where you are in this declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7, 1991. Chicago, Illinois, October 10th, 2010, north, south, east, west, above, below, within. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. And that's our declaration. That's what we're about. That's who we are in the International Black Summit. The purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. And that's what our talk show is about. We bring people that allow a conversation to occur with you who are doing things that we feel are within our declaration.
And they come every week to share with the universe the things that they are doing so that maybe there's something that you'll hear that will interest you.
That's what happened last week. We had three great educators on, one from Chicago, one from New Orleans, and one from New York or New Jersey last Sunday. And what a wonderful show. And I invite you to go back and listen to that show. It is archived, and all you have to do is go to summit.org, and it will play that show. Or you can go to blogtalkradio.com and look in the archives and put in October 3rd and 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or whatever your time zone is. And you can listen to that show again. You can always reach us through the Black Summit Network, and we invite you to join our network when you go to our website at blacksummit.org. And we are so proud to announce that the 2011 annual event will be held in Chicago, Illinois. And we are, oh my God, so excited about that. And you'll find more about that. That was just decided today in Baltimore. And we are, like I said, you will hear more and more about that as time goes on. And so it's always the first weekend in August, and I'm trying to pull up the date for you. I'll give it to you in a moment, so you'll have the exact dates. You can put it on your calendar now, and you can join us in Chicago for our annual summit event with people from all over the world who come together for a conversation that's given to us by life to the world through people of Black African descent. And what a wonderful weekend it is. So let's move on and talk a little bit about education right now. And as we talk about education, you know, it is so very important that in our declaration, when we talk about, you know, funding our communities and just the self-generation and all of the different things that we stand inside of that declaration, all of those things, it's all based on education and how we educate the people in our community and how we educate each other. So with us this evening is Marie Smith, and I will let Marie introduce herself. She's referred to us by one of our other talk show hosts, Glenn, and everybody knows Glenn. And Marie, welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And as you said, my name is Marie Smith, and I've known Glenn for quite a few years. I actually met at Landmark Education. I have been a participant of the Black Summit back years ago in the 90s. And right now, I am currently a teacher, middle school, sixth grade, here in New York City. For me, this has been a change of career. I actually transformed that whole, you know, aspect of, you know, who I am and who I want to be, and education certainly was a calling for me. So this is my fifth year as a teacher. I teach sixth grade. I will say I was educated here in New York City, and it was a bit of a shock when I decided to, you know, enter into the profession. As to how and what has happened with education from back when I was coming along. But one of the things, I wasn't on the call last week, and I didn't get to hear the show. But just from talking to Glenn, you know, I understand that many of the conversation had a lot to do with educating our youth and the kind of things that are important or things that maybe we need to do to to improve the education process for them in our community. And I will say, for me, one of the things that, something that I think needs to be addressed is the parent-teacher connection. I think that that tends to be a very, very big missing for our students in our community. Not like there's any intention or whatever, but, you know, teachers let me back up a little bit. It also was a little shocking for me to see that overwhelming amount of, or the lack of, African-American teachers. That's the first thing. So Our kids do not have a lot of exposure to many African-American teachers. That is a little troubling to me. But, and as an African-American, I make it a point to make connections with parents to just keep them in the loop and give them some suggestions, recommendations, and guidance in terms of, you know, working with their student. It's definitely a partnership. It's like not something that can be done alone, not like let's just drop your kid off into the class and the teacher's going to perform miracles. Because there is, there is this conversation inside of many of the schools, particularly here in New York. It's like these kids, those kids. So, as soon as you hear that, these kids, those kids, they're only this or they're that or they're not, you know, going to be. There's that whole, you know, now conversation of not really working with them or teaching them to have them be their best. So parents need to be more involved with the teacher, more involved with the school, more involved with curriculum, more involved with what kind of things, you know, are happening with their kids. And they don't have to just wait. It's not just like twice a year open school week. They really need to, demand or be involved in the parent-teacher association, something that gets them connected to what kind of things are happening with their kids in school. And that's one thing that I see is critical and it's missing.
Okay. So let me ask a question here because I'm a parent, and my daughter went to school in the public school system until high school, and then she went to private school for 2 years, and then she went to public school again for her junior and senior year, and I don't know how it is in New York, but I know one of the things from the time she was born I started working on what school she was going to get into. You know, it's like in Chicago, it's about getting into the right school.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are certain things that as parents we had to do. Mm-hmm. We had to know what schools, you know, we had to know the system. You know, the magnet school system. We had to know when to fill out those applications. We had to know which school, you know, you did have choice. I mean, I filled out 16 applications when she was in kindergarten or when she was in nursery school so that she could either go to a kindergarten or first grade, you know, one of the two, because she could stay where she was for kindergarten. But I happened to get her into a magnet kindergarten. But, you know, you really have to start very early. Now, I happen to know the system. I happen to have friends and relatives that worked for the Board of Education. So I knew that. I was aware of that. Most parents are unaware of the system. Most people think, you know, when I talk to people about filling out applications, when I would go to the doctor's office and I'd hear the parents talking about, you know, like their children had to go to the neighborhood school. They didn't even know that they had options at that time. You know, they're more informed now, but at that particular time, they did not know that you could fill out an application, that you could become a part of the lottery. They thought, you know, it was just for people who knew people. They thought that's the way you got in, you know. So I guess my question is, you know, how do we get parents involved who don't have a clue about how the system works? They just, you know, they know they live in a particular neighborhood, and in the neighborhood, their schools may not, like I know in the city of Chicago, the neighborhood school might not be the best school for a particular child, because they here they focus on different things. There's a big book that comes out every October. It's called Options for Knowledge, and it lists every high school, every elementary school, every middle school, as it's called in some places, and what their focus is. Now, if you don't know what your child needs, you really don't know what kind of school to put them in. So Marie, where do we start? You know, how do we, as parents, how do we learn that system? How do we do that? You know, how do we get that information to a parent?
Well, one of the things that you said, starting early, that's key. Starting from the time that your child enters school. And I am very aware of the fact that many parents feel stuck in a system that they have no choice. I am very big on choice. And now we know with the president's initiative and this big push now for education, things are going to be changing. Well, things are beginning to change across the board, where certain things that New York is doing, maybe Chicago's not doing, or Baltimore's not doing, and now we're going to be changing where they're going to have these common standards and, you know, common curriculums across the country for many of the kids, so that everyone is learning the same thing. But here's something. The parents, I understand that it's hard to kind of find out. Parents have a lot more, they have a lot more power than I think that they know. The schools really do listen to the parent if there's something or that they don't like or something that they're not particularly happy with as far as their child is concerned. Schools listen. Now, what they count on is that parents don't know. But once a parent gets involved, and maybe the parent teacher association in that particular school, they have parent coordinators in school, and now a lot of information has been made available online. This is like kind of the best thing, where parents can go online. They can check anything and everything, for the most part, that they want to know about their school, about their child's school, about the neighborhood schools. And in the event that their child is in a school that they actually are not satisfied with, they definitely have that option to be able to take their kid out and put them someplace else. So it really does require, you know, reaching out, asking questions, come up to the school, find out what's happening, you know, what's going on. They don't have to just wait for somebody to decide or tell them that this is what's happening. I've often spoken to parents that I've seen when I feel a kid is kind of at risk, where they're in a school, and you can see the behavior or things happening where you know the parent would not necessarily condone or support. I call a parent myself, and I say, here's what's happening. And I've had parents actually take their kids out because that influence is there for those young people and put them in another school. They definitely have that. So, you know, it can be very difficult, but so to the parent association, the school parent coordinator, anything that, you know, information, the internet are all ways in which parents can find out what they need to know about their kid's school and the kind of curriculum, the kind of education that their kid is getting, and they can decide for themselves whether or not they want to keep their child in that school.
So what do you do, because one of the things that is educators are always talking about is how the parents, let's say parents who aren't educated themselves,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, and like you mentioned earlier, they just bring their child, drop the child off, you know. How do we get to those parents? You know, what is it that can be done to, you know, to get the parent educated? You know, one time we were sitting around talking, and I was like, it's almost, you know, I almost thought like it could be a mandate that if you are a parent, you must have a high school education. And if you don't have one, you should be made to get one. And maybe that could be offered at their child's school.
Well,
you know,
I would say, what
do you think about that?
Well, you know, listening to what you're saying, I don't know. I wouldn't myself say that, you know, a parent or, you know, it should be mandated that anyone should have to go back to school. I mean, that could be a challenge, particularly in homes where maybe it's a single parent home and, you know, the parent has to work. But certainly I would say maybe there should be some insistence on schools or in the community where you begin to have parent workshops where parents can come in to, you know, it doesn't have to be a mandate, but at least an option for them to come in to have ask questions. I think the schools would definitely work with the parents because we have the parent associations. And one of the biggest complaints from most of the schools is that the parent representation is so low. They have these meetings. They have people that are organizing. They have workshops. They have computer training classes. I mean, a lot of different resources that are available for parents to participate in. So I think my question or my concern is what do we do to get parents to actually come, you know, to just come.
No, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, to just come. And, I don't know. I don't have that answer. Often the students sometimes can be instrumental themselves in, you know, getting their parents to come and participate in something that's happening at school. And I understand that it can be demanding, you know, with regard to people's schedules. But there are sometimes Saturday, weekend workshops, things that, you know, to make it a little bit easier for them to be able to participate. But there has to be, in our community, we have to become more involved in what's happening with our children in school. We have to be. That is a very, very big missing right now. Do I have the answer as to how to get parents involved? I think some of the resources are there. The more involved they are, the more they can demand. And the more that will become available, particularly now. I mean, this is a time where we have a president who's very big on education, you know, really, you know, having some difficulties with his agenda, but really to the point of understanding that our, you know, without him coming out and saying it, our community is the most at risk. And to have that continue because we don't have the kind of parent participation that's needed, like they should be there banging the door down to be able to learn what they need to learn, know what they need to know, and to make sure that their child is getting the kind of education that they need to get. I can't tell you how to get them to do that, but it needs to be done.
Yeah, Marie, I wasn't talking about working parents. I'm talking about parents who aren't working. Who are not educated, you know, those. Usually the ones that are working usually are the ones that are involved as much as they can be. I'm talking about the ones that are not, who expect the teachers. You know, one educator told me that the parents know the system so well that they, you know, not only do they drop their children off, they drop their children off without their uniforms on because they know that their uniforms, extra ones in the office to put on them. They're having children. And one school in Chicago, the parents have found out that they get a special allotment from Social Security if their child is labeled special needs. And so they're asking, they know the parents have a right to request the test, their child to be tested. And not only do they request it, they tell the child to not answer the questions right, find the right answer, and mark it something else so that the child flunks the test, they can be labeled, and they can get an extra allotment from Social Security. Now, those are the kind of parents that I'm talking about that are challenging, you know, from some of the educators that I've spoken to. But that's what they have to deal with in some of the schools. But Marie, hold on for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Before you respond, let me remind everyone this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and I'm Henrietta Burr, your host for tonight, and I'm speaking with one of our great educators in the country, Marie Smith from New York, from the state of New York. And Marie, we have a hand ready, so I'm going to go to one of our callers, 757-969. Do you have a question or comment?
Hi. Oh, hi. This is Althea Donnelly. I was on last week. Hi.
Yeah.
And the conversation, I was listening to the conversation, and I'm teaching here in Virginia. And we have, and Marie is right, that it's sometimes it's really hard to get, the parents do need to be involved. And in Virginia, what we have to do at our school is we have to make home visits. We have to, I call the parents a lot. I make myself available no matter, this is what I do on a personal basis. I make myself available no matter what. And we also have a parent involvement specialist in our school. Our school is Title I, which means that it's funded. You know, there's a lot of funding from the government because from the state because it's considered a in a neighborhood that's at risk, and so they get a lot of funding from the state. And so we have a parent involvement specialist who has, I mean, they have all kinds of, she has all kinds of resources in her room. And we try to get the parents to come in, and you know what? We send letters out. We talk to the children. We send postcards with the children. And there are some parents that just are not going to show up. They just send their kids to school, and that's part of the problem in our community. Is that some of the parents are very young. They're very young, and sometimes the parents are also the ones that are very young. They did not, I've heard some parents say, the ones that are young, that their experience in school wasn't that great. And so they don't trust teachers. They don't trust administrators that they're going to be on their side. That's some of the conversations that I've heard from the young parents. I mean, parents who are 20 and 21 and have, you know, 5 or 6-year-olds in school. So there's a lot of things we do, and there's a lot of things that are available, and some of the parents are just not, they have to really be, we have to really keep in contact with them on a steady basis to the point that they get so aggravated that they do eventually come in. But for the most part, the parents that are working are the ones that come in and the ones that are involved in their children's education. And, you know, it's just up to us that we have to find a way. We really have to find a way. It's real important to find a way to get the parents to come in or to even be involved in their children's education and do stuff at home, like agree to do things at home with the children because they expect us to do everything, and it's impossible. It really is. And it's up to us to really make sure that those parents understand that we are on their side, that we're not, you know, some educator in the sky, that we are on their side. We're on bringing ourselves down to where they are, if that's what we have to do, but bringing them to a point that they understand that we are for them and we are for their children. We're for our community winning, and have them really understand that. It's going to take a lot. That was my comment.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us again this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I have a friend who works with a program that's called Understanding Poverty. And one of the things that she does is she goes around to the suburban schools, because in the city of Chicago, they tore down the project, you know, their work. These high-rise projects in Chicago for years, and over the last, I guess, 5 years or so, they brought them all down. And what they did was they offered Section 8 vouchers to the people, and many of the vouchers said that you had to move outside of the city or to a certain part of the city. And so now you have a lot of people who came from an urban area in a, you know, in a suburban area. And the teachers are having a difficult time because they, according to this person, they don't understand the situations that these children come from. And they don't really know how to communicate with the parents or the children. And so there's a program called, and it's a book. Actually, I can't think of the author's name, but it's called Understanding Poverty. And it talks about the relationships that that people in areas under what's considered an underprivileged area, the relationships they have with one another, and when they, the reason that it's so difficult for them to make it in a different situation is because they don't have those same relationships. And so it's like I heard you say, that you have to let the parent know that you are on their side, that you are really working for their children, you know, for their, you know, to help support their child, you know, as far as their education is concerned. But how much, you know, what do you think about that? Do you think it has anything to do with understanding where they're from, you know, what their life has been like? You know, do you think that that's one of the challenges?
Okay, may I?
Oh, go ahead, Marie.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to say that is a very big, that what you just said is a major issue. And I will say that from my experience with it here in New York and being a more recent, you know, person to the profession, what's missing is that whole aspect, because there is a definite cultural difference with the community, African American community, and the urban community, and the suburban affluent, or not even if it's affluent, but just white community. It's very different. And one of the things that I felt was, or thought was pretty odd, in that when I went back for my master's degree in education, that not a lot of the education and training is done at that level in preparing teachers to handle all children. And that whole cultural and that diversity, the differences in the way we live and the differences in the kind of things that, you know, we like. And, you know, here we're sending out teachers to work in the communities and, you know, I will say white teachers, with our young children that do come from a background or of poverty, or even maybe from another country. We have in New York very, very big immigrant community from the Caribbean, and there is no understanding. There really is no way, and it's not necessarily just poverty. It really has to do with a whole lack of understanding of the culture. It's not taught, not really included in education and preparing teachers, and I think it's a problem. Now, going back to the poverty part, our kids and the parents of our kids, these so-called poverty kids, often when I look to see, you know, the kind of things that they have, the kind of clothes that they wear, the gadgets, the cell phones, the iPod, whatever, these little things that they come to school with, it often makes me wonder, you know, about the poverty. Now, I understand that they don't live the same way that, you know, some of these kids live out in the suburbs, but I would suggest, and this is something that we really have to do some outreach with our parents out in these communities, is that the money that they spend sometimes on buying all of these things, and particularly the sneakers, they really could use to invest in taking their children places. There are so many different cultural events and things that their kids could be doing other than, you know, video games and sneakers. And a lot of what happens is that these kids that are now, as you say, going out, they're just not exposed to many things. and through no fault of their own as kids, other than the parent doesn't see that that's a need to take their children places. So it's a double, it's a two, I see it as twofold. Yes, understanding poverty, but also there is a definite cultural difference, and there that also needs to be understood.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, like, how we do that. You know, it's there's a school here in Chicago, the University of Chicago, they have lab schools, and they have a lab school that's been around a long time. You know, it's a private school, and it costs about $35,000-$40,000 a year now. And I'm guessing at that figure, No, that's not correct. Let me just say it's a private school, all right? I'm thinking of the university. But it's a private school. Now what they've done is they are taking what they've learned from that lab school and starting charter schools, because Chicago is all about charter schools. And you can start a charter with any idea. Like, we could have the International Black Summit Charter School. That's an idea. All we need is somebody to write it up, and the city would fund it. And we would have, you know, like, so much time to get it off the ground. And if the test scores went up, you know, we get more and more money. You know, like, donated to us. So the University of Chicago has started these charter schools. And what they do, if they've taken their model from having the lab school, the private school where people have to pay tuition, and they've taken it and put it in to some of the smaller areas, you know, the areas where normally people wouldn't get to go to a private school, but they're magnet, the light magnet schools, it's a lottery that the child has to be in. But they're taking some of the programs, and most of the teachers are young Caucasian teachers. Now, there are African-American and Hispanic teachers, but in many of the programs, you'll see very young, right out of college teachers. So one of the things that I notice about these charter schools is you don't have the you know, when you have that seasoned teacher who knows students so well, they can look at a child and know what to do with them right away. So you don't have that. And many times, like you said, they don't know the culture, because it's not their culture, but they have the program and they have the money behind them. And so that's what's happening in Chicago in many, many areas are charter schools. And still only a certain amount of people are allowed to go to these particular schools. But there's, you know, that's the growing thing here, more and more and more. So I'm wondering, do you have any feeling about charter schools?
I think that you're going to start seeing more and more because, for one thing, the president seems to be very big on charter schools. It's been this big push because even in New York, there had been a lid, so to speak, on the amount of charter schools that we could actually have here. And when I say charter, I mean the free charter schools, because there are those that you pay, and then there are those that are public charter schools. And one of the reasons that there was a lid on is because in New York has a very strong teacher union. And that teacher union, the teachers union really did not favor charter school because, you know, it's a threat to their jobs, right, in the regular public school. But since this city was interested in this, you know, see, it's all about money, it's all about economics, was interested in this race to the top, you know, money, that initiative from the Obama administration, they had to come up with, you know, some compromises and, you know, make some amends and changes to be able to get some of that money. And one of the things is that now there will be significantly more charter schools available, which I think is a good thing. But again, because I feel parents should have choice. I believe in choice. But again, as you said, in terms of the teachers and the young teachers, and this is not to say that they're not good teachers or they're mm-hmm. not well-intentioned, but again, if we don't get our hands on this education thing for our community and really start to focus in on making sure that our kids are being educated and that they are getting to college, you will see less and less. I mean, already we're not getting into colleges. The enrollment of African Americans in going to college has, you know, already slipped, okay, already low, already the numbers are declining. So you'll continue to see the young white teacher coming out and going in to teach our students because we won't have the numbers of African Americans that will be in college to pursue these positions. So it's really a major concern. As far as a community, we really have to take this on big. We have to take it on.
When we come back, I'd like to talk about how to take it on, you know, like some mm-hmm. solutions.
Yes, this is, I think, very good that you said that because that's where the conversation needs to go. The brainstorming, mm-hmm. the ideas, the what can be done. It's like it's a major problem, and it's not something that's just going to get resolved overnight. And, you know, it's not like about the teacher. It's not just about – it's really a community problem. And then when we talk about the community, we have to include all of those people, members, you know, of the community that can be – that have that vision and can see that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. You know, I listened to Michael Bazin. I don't know if you all listen to him, but one of the things that, you know, he'd been doing, which I thought it was a pretty good thing, it's a beginning, was this whole mentoring program. And that, you know, where kids are being mentored or mentors are taking on kids to help the parents that are struggling and not, you know, able to do and give and provide in the way in which they can, and particularly in the areas of education. So it would be great to have that conversation. What is there to do and who's going to do it?
Yeah, what are the solutions? The other thing I'd like to talk about when we come back was something that Marie and I were talking about earlier. What about the parents? You know, like we have most of the graduates, I would say 30-year-old, you know, they've got PhDs now at 30, and the people who are going to college, they're going, you know, and they're getting it all, but they're not going into education because, number one, it doesn't pay that much.
Right.
And, they, you know, there's people are making the big bucks now. And number two, there's so many displaced teachers. You know, even if they do go in education, a few that do, there's not really a place for them. They mm-hmm. find it hard to work. So, but let me go. Let's come back to that, and we're going to talk about solutions. Our call-in number is 646-716-9827. 646-716-9827. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. And we invite you to go to our website, blacksummit.org, and read our declaration, read our purpose, join our conversation. You know, send us an email. Let us know where you are in the declaration. Read our declaration and see what it feels like to you. See if you would love to be a part of this universal community of wonderful people who are in this conversation about their vision for themselves and the black community. We are right out of Baltimore just earlier today, and a wonderful weekend, the leadership body and the facilitator body for the International Black Summit, and working on what we're going to do in 2011. And we have some wonderful programs coming up, and this is one of them, and we'll have more of the talk show programs. But we also have community summits as well. Our annual event in 2011 will be held here in Chicago, Illinois. And so soon, we just came to that today. So there's nothing on the website about that yet. But soon we'll update the website so you'll be able to register, because we do, you know, it does benefit you to register early for the annual event. You can help us out on the talk show. We want to become premium. And what it means to be premium is that we can hold more and more live callers so our conversation can increase. And you may donate. You can go to blacksummit.org and donate whatever amount of money you choose so that we can open up this conversation to more and more people and have more of a panel discussion, actually, with educators and different people. Let us know what kind of shows that you would like to hear. We have two wonderful educators on with us tonight, one from Virginia and one from the state of New York, that you've been listening to. I'm your host, Henrietta Byrd, and let's get back to the solutions about parent involvement in education, as well as just any other solution that we can talk about. We're talking with Marie in New York and Althea in Virginia. So we're back.
Well, one of the things that I see, first of all,
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Althea. I'm sorry. One of the things that I see, the book you were talking about is Understanding Poverty, and it's by Ruby Payne. And hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're here.
Oh, okay. Okay, I heard some noises. And Ruby Payne is, she's a white author. And one of the things that I see is that it's time for us to get our own books out there about our community and what there is to offer and how we see our community and what we can do to impact our community so that they know that education is important and it doesn't have to be about poverty. You know, it's who we are in the world and who we are to one another and how we relate to one another. And I think part of the problem is how we as African Americans relate to one another. And I think if we take a good look at ourselves, and like the International Black Summit, those kind of programs have us take a look at who we are and who we're being for one another. And I think that's one of that's the first step for me. Like, who am I going to be for the people in my community? Am I going to, and what can I bring to the table? What can I offer that's going to make a difference for them and have them see who they are through me?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the first and foremost important thing. Like, get our books, instead of having white people writing about how we are and getting those books out there, what about us writing about who we are? Because no one knows us like we do, you know, and getting that out there.
Okay, and that's a great solution. And, I mean, that's a great solution, because we have some wonderful educators and many, many retired ones, you know, and writing a book is something, you know, definitely something that we can do so that we understand. We had Greta Chamberlain on last week who studied African culture. Well, you heard her story, and she would be a good person to write. You know, I told her when we got off, I said, Greta, we need to write your story so that other people can use it. You know, other educators can use it.
Right.
Marie, what do you think?
I think what Althea is saying is very key to a part of a solution, the beginning of a solution. However, you actually said something that could even take it a little further. I mean, you know, the writing is great. It's really about getting our voice heard, because the African-American voice in education is not really very loud. It's not heard. And you just spoke about retired educators. We have probably hundreds of educators throughout the country who probably have a lot that could be said and a lot, you know, to share with regard to the concerns and the kind of things that would impact and make a difference in our community with our children. And often we're silent. You know, we're kind of like a silent body of people who, you know, just kind of, it's not like we just go with the status quo, but because we are in the minority, we don't have a big voice. You know, I had done some research back some years ago on this particular topic with regard to the amount of educators that, you know, like what the percentage was in terms of ethnicity, and it was pretty shocking. And this is a few years ago. I don't know what it is like today. But it was, you know, shocking to me to read that, you know, 85% of the educators in this country are white, 15% a minority, and then, so not necessarily just African-American, and that in a child, an African-American's child's lifetime, they can go through 12 years of school and never ever see an African-American male teacher. So, you know, these are the kind of things that are really, I think, pretty important. And we probably, like Althea says, you know, who we are for each other, and how we, our perceptions and the way in which we see things can at times be a bit different. And I can tell you sometimes I can have a better impact on a student just merely because of the fact that they can relate and identify with me. I'm not going to say always, but many times. And I've had the experience where, you know, I've had parents say, you know, I come here, my kid, has problems, he misbehaves. What is it that makes it so different that he can do well in your class? And I said, well, you know, I hate to say this, but I will tell you, maybe just because of the fact that I'm black. She said, you think it really makes a difference? I said, it makes a difference for some kids. So, you know, we have a lot to say, and our voice has to get heard some kind of way. So that really is a good, you know, place to start with regard to a solution, like where are the educators? Where are the African-American educators? How can we come together? How can we begin, you know, to the big conversation of, you know, coming up with solutions and bringing others in to be able to help us to forward those solutions. So I think that that's a very, very good start.
Yeah. You know, I've also noticed that there are a lot of programs, like in Chicago, they're called Teachers for Chicago. There's all these programs where if you have a bachelor's degree in anything, it doesn't have to be education, they will offer you, they'll pay for your master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you promise to teach for so many years. I think it's 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are coming out of corporate America, you know, going into programs like that. Now, what if, as a solution, what if we created something like that, where we generated funds from some of our African American billionaires to fund people, fund, you know, college students to get their master's degree, you know, to do like a Teachers for Chicago program, where we could, you know, where they have an incentive to go, where they wouldn't have to have all the student loans and things like that in order to get the requirements to be educated. Do you think that's one of the problems?
Pay for it. Well, you're talking about a graduate degree or an undergraduate degree? Because
really
there are programs that
a graduate degree, because almost now, if you don't have a graduate degree, it's hard to find a job.
Well, as far as those programs that are, you know, the teacher initiatives that they have for educators, that's one of the programs that I participated in, because here in New York it's called the Teaching Fellows Program. And I left corporate America and I applied and was, accepted into that program. So that is how I got my master's in education, and it was subsidized by them. And I will tell you, even with that, it was a little, and I look at this all the time. It's just, I look at this all the time. Whenever, whenever something's happening and it's, in big numbers, I always look to see, okay, where are we? And I just look. And in this program, in this particular session or this particular cohort that I was in, they selected 1,900 people out of 19,000. And when all of us were finally together in a room in Radio City, I think we were Radio City, oh no, Lincoln Center, and when I looked around to see this 1,900, I to myself, I'm saying, where are we still? So in this big, diverse New York City, out of 19,000 people, we still couldn't get a good representation of African Americans. I mean, it's just, these are the things that I don't think people even know. I don't realize. I don't know that people realize or even can imagine still exists to this day here in the year 2010, that we are still so underrepresented, and that, with the degree, even with the degrees, we're still underrepresented. We're still not always being chosen. So, like that whole, I hear you, and it really is something that you would be surprised once you start to look to see, like, there are many African Americans with bachelor's degrees, but then why are they not still getting, these opportunities? This is a big city, really diverse, mostly the urban, the inner city schools here are mostly minority. And yet, out of all those selected teachers, you couldn't find more African Americans. It's a problem.
Right. So that's something else. We need a solution to that,
mm-hmm.
to get more African American men and women into the field of education.
That's right. And the money, like you said, but with the way that things are going, the economy, this particular program, this Teaching Fellows, became a big deal when things started happening with regard to the
economy. Right, but there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money
mm-hmm.
out here. Believe me,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of money out here. I really apologize. I have to cut you short. We only have a couple of minutes left. Believe it or not, the hour is gone by.
So
we are talking we're always in our declaration, and in our declaration, we stand for empowerment of our youth, empowering our youth. And all of this, we're talking about parents, we're talking about teachers, but the bottom line is the youth. That's really where our focus is, and we want to find out ways, and we understand that we have to reach the parents. We have to get people into education. So, send us an email, give us a call and let us know. One of the groups that will be on sometime this month is a group of teachers, educators, because some are retired, but they're educators for Obama. And they have an initiative that they are working on, and they're getting hundreds of people together to do exactly what we're doing on this program. And so I would like for you all to hear them, and hopefully I can get them on, sometime this month. I won't say next week, because I don't try to get them on tonight, but, everybody's schedule is wonderful these days. But when we talk about empowerment of youth, I'd like for you to just give each of you to give us a closing 30 seconds, and I'd like to invite everybody to the Oxygen Room. The Oxygen Room is where we take this program and continue it. And I'm waiting for them to give us the number to call in into the Oxygen Room. But so in closing, what would be your 30-second, what would you say a parent could do, or anyone, a teacher, anyone, to empower the youth?
One of the things as a teacher that I can do to empower the youth is to just listen, be there, give them the opportunity to express who they are, to have them know their culture, to express who they are, but also to have them know where they come from, and to empower them to be strong in what that education is very important, and to just have them be and just be there for them. That's it. Just be there for them, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no matter what. That's key.
No matter what.
So listen. You said listen mm-hmm. to them. Be there for them.
Be there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, listen and be there for them. Marie, what do you say?
Well, for me, I make them feel special, and I let them know that they are very smart. I always empower my kids to make them know that they are smart.
That they are smart. That's right. And their culture is the other thing that was mentioned. Mm-hmm. Ladies, thank you so very much from the International Black Summit. We so appreciate you. Keep up the great work that you are both doing in Virginia and in New York. We acknowledge your effort, your work. Please come back again and share more and more, because the more you share, we have, and I'm very proud that we have 27,000 listeners now. And so you're being heard all over. And so, you know, as you give, you will receive. Thank you for just everything that you've done. I will give a call back. And let you know about the Oxygen Room. I don't know if what's going on, but I'll let you know in a few moments, because we're going to be off the air shortly. But remember, this is the International Black Summit Talk Radio. You've been listening to Althea and Marie, two of our great educators in the United States. We acknowledge them and thank God for them, for the work that they put in every day with our children, with the parents. You know, reach out in your community is what the message that they've given us today. Get involved in your child's learning. You know, don't just drop them off at school. Go in, meet the teacher, find out what homework is really supposed to be done. You know, just take advantage of the information that we've received today, and go to blacksummit.org and join us. Send us information, any show that you would like to hear, and God bless you. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you both.
Thank you.